weekend.
Interesting that we're about to do a gloomy subject of sorts, and the sun just popped out here at the studio. All right, I'm not sure about the timing there.
Theatrics.
We'll have some open line time later in our toward the end of the hour here. Still interesting things to talk about. Once again, our sponsor, Happy Valley Comic Con. Here we go, this weekend. We've been talking about this for many weeks, and it's tomorrow and Sunday at Nittany Valley Sports Center. A lot of folks going to be there. A lot of things going to be there. Looks like it's going to be a ton of fun. So we encourage you to go out and have fun either tomorrow or Sunday or both. There we go. You can get a two-day ticket and save some money. There's a lot of stuff there. You might need the two-day ticket. One of those going to be appearing this weekend is Penn State grad. We welcome to our program writer Andrew Kevin Walker. First off, Mr. Walker, good morning, and thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Please, it's my pleasure. Nice to meet you over the phone. I apologize for not being there in person.
We're thrilled to have you regardless.
Can we just call you Andrew? Is that okay?
Yeah, or Andy is great.
Andy, all right, there we go. Now, we've had these ads running for many weeks. The movie Seven, going back to the 90s, you wrote the story, the screenplay for that. You're a graduate of Penn State, and now you're in town this weekend. And it sounds, Andy, like they're keeping you very busy today. What exactly are you doing today? Wow.
I'm just trying to cram a lot of things in a few days. I'm mainly speaking to some of the screenwriting students in some of the classes here at Penn State. And then, yes, I'll be at the Comic-Con. And then there is a screening of Seven tonight. It's the 30th anniversary, which is, I can't believe that's true, since I must have written it, I guess, when I was 13.
Yeah. Clearly, yeah.
It's David Fincher, you know, the incredible director. This anniversary, he oversaw a complete, just a kind of 4K, a new, I don't want to say cleaned up, but he just went through frame by frame, and it's now the most beautiful version of it that's existed. So there's a screening tonight, and I think a meet and greet before. I think it's sold out, which it must be a small theater. And then tomorrow, yeah, I'm at the Comic-Con, and I'll be signing things. For the price that my signature is worth, which is free.
That's a good price. I like that. There we go.
Oh, man.
Very nice.
How often, just out of curiosity, do you get back here to Penn State often? Have you been back here ever since you left?
I've been back. It's been a while. I'm from Mechanicsburg, so, you know, I do try and go at least once a year, if I can, to visit my mom, and I have a lot of family still here. But it's the first time in a little while that I've been to Penn State. It's been incredible to kind of. It's just so many memories of, you know, going here and studying. I did study film here. It's incredible to see the changes. It's kind of like, oh, this is the campus I remember, except for all these gigantic futuristic UFOs that have landed, which are all these new buildings that are incredible.
That's what I was wondering, is if you've just, because, man, that the downtown area has certainly built up. Campus, you know, there's some things that obviously are still holding true and steady, but boy, a lot of changes, a lot of new buildings, a lot of, space that was open that now has buildings on it. But also from the film, I went to Penn State in communications, and I am truly astounded by how different the equipment that these kids get to work with now is compared. I'm guessing it's much the same for you with these film students, because we've had a little interaction with some of the film students up on campus, and first of all, there's some amazing young people there doing
cool stuff,
great work, but also, my gosh, the facilities they have now compared, I'm guessing it's the same for you, compared to when I was there, was it's really just amazing. It's night and day.
I graduated in 1986. When I was here, we were still filming on Bolex cameras and shooting 16mm film, and you would send it to be developed, and then you would edit it on a flatbed, you know, with actual physical film. I mean, so, you know, that's some of the things I'm talking about with some of the students, is that now you can go shoot an entire movie and have it look amazing just with your phone. Obviously, the editing you can just have on your laptop, etc. But, you know, I think so much of the change here, specifically at Penn State, is so many of the people who donate, you know, have helped this incredible kind of revolution that you see just walking into Willard, for example, and seeing how incredibly modern the interior is and all the spaces that the students have to kind of study in and work in. But so much of it is also a result of, you know, the Belisario School, which is Don Belisario, who's spearheaded so much of what's going on. But, I just hope that the cool thing for me, I guess, is, you know, whether you're writing with a crayon and, you know, on a napkin like I do, or you're writing on a computer, screenwriting is still screenwriting, so I can still talk to them about three act structure and kind of the things that I love about screenwriting, and not be concerned that it's a completely outdated notion, except maybe the students would rather work in a 5-act structure or 10-act structure, but that thing hasn't changed in that it's easy for anyone who wants to sit down and try and write a screenplay to actually do it.
Andy, I'm just curious, you know, what are some of your other memories of your days here at Penn State? Now, we'll warn you, they moved the creamery. Did you know?
Well, the creamery moved.
They moved it.
You know, I remember the food in the commissaries. I started at Altoona campus. I had real fond memories of Altoona, which happens also to be where I was born. You know, I miss the Rathskeller. I'm going to mispronounce it, but and it will. You know, it's all dating me. I said I graduated '86. I mean, I remember there was a place called the Nickelodeon, and it was just this really weird, amazing. Not everybody just had a VCR in their room, so it was just this place where you could go and point at a movie, and they would put it in a VCR, and you would go to, like, you know, it sounds more seedy than it was, or maybe it was, but you could go to, like, booth 5 and watch, you know, a movie on this little TV with friends. There were some big booths and small booths, but it was like a way to see movies, because VHS wasn't so affordable that it was in everyone's home yet. So there's so much that's different. It's amazing to see the stuff that's the same. You know, it's amazing to see the State Theater still there, et cetera. And I remember, you know, which dorms I lived in. So it is very cool that so much is exactly the same. It's just surrounded by all this, you know, modernity.
God forbid, Andy. Now, this is Scott. I didn't go to Penn State, but after I graduated college, I came up here for a job in the summer of 85. Now, you say you graduated in 86, right?
Right. Yep.
I was on the radio. God forbid, did you listen to me?
I didn't. I don't think I listened to a whole lot of radio back then. I don't know. I was probably desperately trying to pass my required French class, which I barely did pass.
Wait a minute. Are you serious? You had a required French class? Really?
Yes, because because Penn State offers a well-rounded education, and that was part of my, you know, degree program. And yes, I was not good at it. I was going to say in French that I was very poor at it, but I don't know how to.
I was going to say, you're doing French screenwriting now? Okay, that would be interesting.
I wish.
Now, are you, I went online, did some research. We'll talk about Seven in a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, are you writing, like, right now?
I literally was writing a couple minutes ago, because I'm right now I don't have a job that I'm doing for pay. I'm just writing a spec script, so that it's like something completely, unfortunately out of my own imagination. Unfortunately, I mean, if I show it to people and it sucks, but I'm just kind of finishing a script that I'm hoping to, you know, kind of pass on and sell. And then recently, there's this amazing filmmaker, Panos Cosmatos, who directed this film that I love, and if people haven't seen it, I urge them to see it, called Mandy. It was out a few years ago with Nicolas Cage. It's a real trip. It's kind of a horror film, and I wrote a script for him. So that one is called Flesh of the Gods, and it's right now Kristen Stewart and Oscar Isaac are attached, so that's one we're trying to get made. So, you know, in the midst of chasing jobs and trying to get assignments, you're often doing quote-unquote spec scripts, meaning speculative, in that nobody's paying me to do it, but I'm hoping later we get it made.
Now, Andy, I don't know this. Do you live on the West Coast?
I do. I'm in Los Feliz, like in Los Angeles.
Okay. Yeah. Now, if you're a writer in today's day, I mean, we talked about the 80s and how things have changed immensely and all that sort of thing.
Yep.
If you're a writer with technology today, can't you live anywhere? Just write and send it in or something? How does that work?
Especially after, you know, kind of post-COVID, if you can say that's kind of where we're at. Or at least post-lockdown, now that Zoom is kind of more acceptable for meetings and there's a realization that it's semi-face-to-face, I could, and sometimes I do wish that I still lived on this coast. I don't think my significant other, Julie, would love being in the snow, but since we work at home, you know, I figure you wouldn't have to drive any much. But the thing, though, that's hard on Zoom, and I think you can imagine it, excuse me, is trying to pitch like a story to someone. It's, if you're not in the room with them, it's kind of like pitching with like you sitting in a chair and they're facing you, and behind them is like the sun just shining from behind them into your eyes. You, if they're not laughing, if they're not reacting, if they're just kind of sitting there with their arms crossed, it's very, your tongue starts to, as it is now, cleave to the top of your mouth, and it's very hard to get a reaction. It's like trying to tell an elaborate joke over Zoom and then just watching the person, like, are you frozen? Or so it's, face-to-face is still good, but so it's debatable. But, yes, you could do it from anywhere, and that's kind of what I'm, you know, trying to impart to some of the students and you know, because there is, I think, a sense that to study film or to study screenwriting, you know, you got to go to USC or UCLA or NYU, and those are all great schools. But especially with writing, and especially now, one of the other things that, because you were talking about change, that's changed so much is access, because of the internet, to not just films and entire libraries of more obscure films, but screenplays. And the key to writing is to be reading kind of a version of what you want to be doing. In other words, screenwriting is such a different piece of writing than a novel, for example. And when I was here, there was 2001: A Space Odyssey in the library. I think maybe they had the script for The Big Chill. But now, you know, students can read, in addition to all the hundreds of how-to screenwriting books, and I'll say the one that I used when I was here and I love still is Sid Field. And all of this advice, quote unquote, it can be found on my website. But it's just cool that people can do it from anywhere. And if they come to Penn State, I think the film program is amazing here. But any place you go, it's, especially with any sort of writing, it's going to demand that you're sitting in the chair doing it or studying it. You know, that's just a simple fact, obviously.
All right. Now, Andy, for folks who aren't familiar, they maybe have seen the word screenwriter or screenplay, all right, which is what you do. What is that exactly? What's a screenplay? What does a screenwriter do?
Screenplay is kind of the way to answer that question. Screenplay is something that you create that has a very weird, I guess unique would be the complimentary way to say it, but format, in that you have these embolden and underline slug lines that basically say interior or exterior or both, but interior radio station day, and then underneath that you start a little bit of description, and in the middle you do dialogue, etc. It looks much more like if anyone's seen a play, you know, a stage play, where the dialogue has the characters' names above it, and then there's a little bit of description, or a lot of description for someone, if someone overwrites the way that I do. But the other big thing about it is that it's if you're doing it right, it's about, you figure about a minute per page. So a screenplay, as opposed to a novel, has a certain limitation. You don't, it's 100 pages or 110 pages or 120 pages. When you thump a 300-page script on a producer or your manager or agent's desk, they're going to probably thump it right back in your face because that means it's a 300-minute movie. But it's that kind of thing. It's a very unique form of trying to write. It's like trying to read a blueprint. It's not always the most pleasurable kind of read.
All right, we're talking with writer Andrew Kevin Walker, who's back in town this weekend for the Happy Valley Comic Con event tomorrow and Sunday. We've got to take a break here. Again, when we come back, Andy, we definitely want to talk about Seven. Some interesting stuff I came across online that I didn't know until you do some digging, like what were they going to do to that movie? You know, that sort of stuff. So stay tuned for that, folks. We're going to take a break right here. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox. Some really cool stuff to go into a weekend. We'll do more of that after this.
For quality you can see and wear, remember PAMP for customized T-shirts, letterheads, envelopes, magnetic signs, and business cards. PAMP has a low minimum of 12 shirts for printing and no minimum on embroidered items. They don't charge art fees or setup fees. Pricing is simple and easy, and they have a quick turnaround. They're open Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Located at 136 South Harrison Road, Pleasant Gap. For more information, call 814-359-2447.
The Center Hall Farm Store is proud to serve our community as a small family business that provides big-time service. Folks, you can still stock up on those wood pellets this winter. The Center Hall Farm Store makes its own horse, cow, pig, chicken, and bird feeds and has a great variety of pet feeds for your needs. Open weekdays from 8 to 4 and Saturday from 8 to noon. Check us out at 110 Allison Street in Center Hall or on the web at centerhallfarmstore.com. That's centerhallfarmstore.com. The Center County Recycling and Refuse Authority is proud to support local sports here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Check out our website at centercountyrecycles.org for employment opportunities, upcoming events, the authority's newsletter, and details on what can and can't be recycled, as well as updated schedules. That's centercountyrecycles.org. Once again, the website is centercountyrecycles.org.
The days are getting longer and sooner than you think. The lawn will need mowed, so decisions have to be made. When you roll out the old mower that just barely made it through last summer, or visit Daughter Equipment just south of Mill Hall on Route 64 and see a great selection of Kubota. Daughter Equipment offers the Kubota B or BX Series compact or subcompact tractors. Either way, with Kubota, you get the number one rated brand in durability, ownership, and the reliability of any under 100 horsepower tractor in the USA. Maybe a tractor isn't what you had in mind. How about a Kubota zero turn mower? Something with lots of horsepower and 42 to 72 inch mower width. You can zip and zoom across your lawn with precision and ease atop a Kubota residential mower. Lawn care never felt this good. Indeed, decisions have to be made. So, to get answers to all your questions, visit Daughter Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64 for Kubota lawn care products.
The Fox! Get up and get going with the Happy Valley, 98.7 The Fox!
Okay, Scott, it's your time to talk. Please
okay,
talk now.
Here we go. All right. All right, welcome back to Let's Talk here for a Friday morning. Again, we're talking with Andrew Kevin Walker, Penn State grad, writer of the movie Seven, which now, Andy, you said earlier you think it's already sold out tonight at the State Theater?
I mean, that's what I'm hearing. I think so.
Okay, that's a bummer. Okay. Well, no, it's not a bummer. You're sold out. That's a good thing.
And yeah, I guess.
You're going to do, is it before or after the movie? You're going to do like a question and answer time.
Well, I think I'm going to do it before just because I go to bed pretty early these days. And it actually wouldn't be that bad because of LA time, but I'd rather do it before and then I will sit and watch the movie, but, it's just, I want to be kind of lucid and probably I'll just start drinking during the movie. I'm kidding. It's not really. But to that end, you know, even though I'm so grateful that people even remember the movie exists, I know a lot of people haven't seen it, so when I talk about it, I try to follow my no spoilers policy.
Okay, that's different. All right. Now, we don't want to give it away, but for folks who have never seen the movie, without giving away the ending, give like the really short version. What is Seven? What happens?
Well, I mean, it's set in a particularly bleak city. It was my love letter to New York City, where I lived in the late 80s, early 90s. And it's a series of murders that are based upon the seven deadly sins that we follow two detectives while they try and catch the murderer.
All right. Now, folks, we're not going to tell you more than that, okay? That's all there is. So you wrote this, I guess, in the late 80s. And now, Andy, how does this work? You write a screenplay, all right? You got a great story there, and then what happens? You give it to somebody. What happens in that regard?
Well, I mean, and I don't mind mentioning that it has a particularly bleak ending. That all the way through trying to get it made over the years, many people were trying to remove the bleak ending. Some were even suggesting there'd be a happy ending. But I was living in New York City. It was within. I worked for Tower for like 3 years. This was like getting towards like the end of being 5 years out of college. And I wrote it. It was an original idea. And then I was desperate to try and get an agent or someone to look at it. I'll tell the really short version, which is I happened to see these movies that were written by this screenwriter, David Koepp, who went on to write Jurassic Park and Mission Impossible and War of the Worlds. He's the nicest guy on the face of the earth. He deserves all the massive success that he's had, but especially because he was still listed. I was living in New York. He was still listed in the phone book. People who don't know, that was the version of the internet back then. And I called him, and he picked up the phone, and I asked if, you know, he didn't know me from anyone, and I said, look, I'm a screenwriter working at Tower Records, and I would love if you would read my script because no agent will look at it without it being recommended by someone they trust. And he just happened, as I say, to be the nicest guy in the world, and he showed it to his agent. And that just began a process of it going around with its bleak ending and not selling. We were trying to sell it and set it up. And then it was finally optioned, which gave me enough money to move from New York to Los Angeles. And over the course of like 5 years, it was being rewritten and drastically changed for a different director. But then thankfully, at a certain point, David Fincher, who had directed Alien 3, came through the door and kind of saved it, saved the ending and made it the film it is today.
Otherwise, the ending of the movie would have changed, and you would have had no power to change it back. Is that
screenwriters don't have much power? they just don't. And so it's kind of like when you find a director. Someone that I do consider like a genius, like David Fincher, it's kind of a marriage, and the kismet of it is so important. And I've been very, very lucky to work with him on on The Game and Fight Club, and I've done rewrites for him of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, which I don't know that it'll ever get made. And I did a draft of a rewrite of The Girl Who Played with Fire, which was, so I've just, and then more recently, the last thing was The Killer with Michael Fassbender that's on Netflix now. You're just hoping to be in agreement and see eye to eye with the director. It happens very often that you don't, but Fincher just happens to be collaborative. But yeah, I had already rewritten it drastically for a different director, and already kind of, in my opinion, kind of ruined it before David even came into the picture.
Hmm. Now, do you have any kind of input on the actors that end up with the roles that you wrote? Do you have any input there?
No. you know, the cliche is, I'm trying to figure out how to tell it without being offensive, but, you know, the old joke would be, you know, the actors who made the mistake of trying to get ahead in the business by sleeping with the screenwriter. I mean, screenwriters just don't have a lot of power. He just... there's a little bit, and yeah, I mean, your opinion is sometimes asked. It depends on, it very often depends on the producer and the director, how much they care what you know, what your opinion is.
Now, the actors, all right, I saw, I guess it's a movie poster from 30 years ago, a very young-looking Brad Pitt from 30 years ago, Morgan Freeman, who also looks younger. Gwyneth Paltrow, who looks very younger. Kevin Spacey, who's kind of on the outs now, but Kevin Spacey, I mean, were you happy when they made the, whoever made the choices of the actors? Like, gee, I kind of wish it was Harrison Ford or something like that.
No, I mean, please, when they tell you Morgan Freeman's going to be in your film, you just jump for joy. And from every single person. I mean, Richard Roundtree is in this movie. I mean, Shaft. It's like, it's a dream come true. John C. McGinley's in it. Arlie Ermey is in it. It's like, the way to describe it is that, because there are a lot of trials and tribulations, it's just the way it is for screenwriters. This is the one they can't take away from me. I same thing happened on The Killer. I mean, it's winning the lottery to get a movie made. It's essentially winning the lottery like twice in one day to get a movie made that you're proud of. This is set experience on Seven, and the same thing happened on The Killer and other stuff that I've done with David Fincher. This was my expectations being exceeded every step of the way of the process. And it's just, like I say, it's incredibly gratifying that people even know that this movie still exists out there. And it's so cool to me that it had a brief, recent re-release on IMAX screens. Fincher, that meticulous artist that he is, he's remastered it not just in 4K, but he's remastered it in 8K, so it's kind of a little bit future-proof as far as the prints go.
Did having something like this occur as early in your career as it did? Did it set any false expectations for you? Because you're saying, I mean, this is kind of magic that happened here. Were you thinking, oh, this is just the way this goes, and it's going to be one after the other? You were pretty savvy.
I don't know if anyone who knows me would ever describe me as savvy, but I had definitely been through the ringer already, having rewritten it for a different director, and because I was, fresh off the, cabbage cart or whatever expression you want to say, I was, new to Hollywood. I was dutifully, following, what was being prescribed by the director and making changes at his behest. I've learned over the years that you really have to make decisions about whether you're going to stick around and kind of, change things, maybe not to your liking, on screenplays that are going through the process. So because I had So what my point there is that I've learned kind of to step away from projects if I don't want to be the one who's taking it in a direction that I don't think is improving it. That's one way of saying that I'm an incredible, you know, persnickety brat. But if I hadn't been around, like, doing those, you know, weird kind of, you know, completely altering rewrites on Seven, then I wouldn't have been the dork that was brought into a meeting with David Fincher. It would have been some other writer down the line, probably. Just briefly, I mean, the only reason that David came in, and it wasn't just David, it was Mike DeLuca at New Line, and it was Brad, and it was Morgan, and Kevin, and everyone, like, kind of protecting the ending. Fincher was accidentally sent my first draft. And that first draft is also on my website, which isn't, so it just goes to show that if he hadn't accidentally been sent the wrong draft and then discussed it with them on the phone and mentioned a specific element of the ending, and they stopped the conversation and said, oh, no. That's not the one we want to make. Then they sent him the rewritten one, and he said, no, I'm not interested in that. He went back to the first draft. All because of that accident is the only reason I'm sitting here at Penn State, you know, talking to a few students and speaking to you today. I mean, it's all thanks to Fincher and a kind of mistake that was made.
Good mistake.
Yeah, thank God.
Very
amazing.
Good mistake. Now, Andy, is again, for folks that aren't familiar, Seven's a bleak movie, okay?
Slightly bleak. Yes,
Sleepy Hollow with Johnny Depp. I've seen that movie, Sleepy Hollow with Johnny Depp, which is kind of dark. And eight millimeter.
I've never seen.
That's just your genre, or is it possible for a screenwriter to get kind of typecast, like, oh, Walker, he only writes bleak stuff? All right. Well, how does that work?
I think there is that possibility. 8mm happens to be one that, just for me personally, I never saw the movie, because that one I didn't see eye to eye with the director, and it was just going to be too painful for me to see how much it changed, even though I love the cast, et cetera, et cetera. To answer your question, I mean, the thing that I was just trying to be careful of early on, because it doesn't seem like a long time to me now, because now I have screenplays that I've written literally like 20 or 15 years ago that I'm still trying to get through the process and trying to get made, and they probably won't be. But it took 5 years for Seven to get made, and during that time, I was often... It was a great writing sample. So even if it was never going to get made, and by great, I only mean that it functioned well as one. I'm not saying it was great writing, but it worked for me to get a few jobs here and there. So the thing that I was just cautious of or conscious of was, hey, don't just become the serial killer guy. Don't take another serial killer job. Even though I do think Sleepy Hollow, which was this amazing special effects artist, Kevin Yeager, the gentleman who created Chucky and like who did the Crypt Keeper for Tales from the Crypt, that show on HBO from years ago. It was his idea to adapt Sleepy Hollow, even though Sleepy Hollow was one that we adapted the story from, and in that sense, cut from whole cloth, even though we were using source material. And I do consider The Headless Horseman to be a kind of version of a serial killer. I don't mind being typecast within what I call one of my favorite genres, which is, I call it the cinema of discomfort. Movies that take you in the safety of your seat in the theater or your couch at home to these places you would never want to go in real life. But there's a roller coaster aspect to experiencing something like Seven, and then, you know, but from the safety of your couch rather than having to go live in New York City like I did. So I'm not worried about people thinking stuff I write is bleak. That's fine with me. Some of my favorite movies are like Midnight Cowboy, Taxi Driver, Straight Time, etc. A lot of movies that I would put under that umbrella of cinema of discomfort. But I don't want to just write the same thing within a certain kind of genre. And I have written comedies. We wrote an animated movie that a friend and I actually self-financed called Nerdland, that's out there with Patton Oswalt and Paul Rudd doing the voices in it, and an amazing cast. Sleepy Hollow has a much more upbeat ending because that's appropriate for it. So I don't worry about it. I like genre stuff. I love detective stuff. You know, if I can pull it off, I just try and do the best I can do within the genre of whatever job I'm lucky to get.
I don't know, Andy. I can't. This is Scott. I can't say I'm a big movie goer, but there's so many sequels out. You know, version 2, version 3. You know, all this sort of is there a problem coming up with original ideas, like some brand new out of right field idea for a movie? Is that hard or something?
It is hard, I think, but the honest thing is, for any writer, and I think it's very freeing once you accept it, is that there really isn't anything new under the sun. There's nothing that hasn't been done. It's just that your voice is what's going to make it different. And my constant advice to any screenwriter or any of these students I'm talking to here, or if I occasionally go to the Austin Film Festival, which is a screenwriter-centric film festival, is to be writing just a movie that you want to see, not trying to write a movie that you want to sell. But I agree. I mean, I don't mind sequels. I mean, Godfather 2 is one of the greatest movies made on the face of the earth. I'm very glad they never managed, and they tried, to make a sequel or prequel to 7. But if you think about, like, the movies that people gravitate towards, I'll give just Oppenheimer as an example, you know, there is still original stuff that's being made, and frankly, there's tons and tons of indie, smaller movies that are, you know, bursting with creativity and originality. It's just, I'll quote, you know, our pal David Fincher again, or for the first time, but, you know, drop his name again, just to say, you know, what I saw David say at some point, and it's very true, I think, is it's never been easier to kind of get movies made, especially for on a smaller scale, budgetarily. But it's also never been harder because of how much material is out there before audiences to get a movie seen.
Well, Happy Valley Comic Con, all right, tomorrow and Sunday. The Empire Strikes Back was a sequel and a great movie.
Yep.
I mean, that was a great story.
Yeah.
So some sequels are good. Other sequels are like, why did they spend money making that thing?
Yeesh. Yeah. It's if you look back at some of the history of Hollywood, like the old days that some people are pining for, it's also almost all sequels. It's kind of incredible to look through some of this. There's big volumes of, like, the history of Warner Brothers, Paramount, Columbia, and you turn the pages and you see a lot of Thin Man and you see a lot of Sherlock Holmes and sequel. So, you know, there's always been great, you know, beside every Casablanca or, you know, Taxi Driver, there was the daring Dobermans about, you know, these Doberman pinchers that rob banks. I mean, it's always a balance between commerce and art, and I just think it's okay to try and make the art into commerce and vice versa.
Andy, Casablanca is one of my favorite movies, and I've always thought, I'm surprised they haven't tried to make a sequel, but please don't, because it would probably be terrible.
Casablanca 2. I mean, Julius Epstein and his brother, you know, Julius Epstein went to Penn State.
Right.
He's an alum. He was one of the people I met when I was here at Penn State.
Huh. Now, really quick, Comic-Con tomorrow and Sunday. Are you there both days?
No, I'm there tomorrow from, like, noon to 5.
Okay, all right.
And all I'm going to really be doing, I think, is, like, I can sign the cover page of, like, 7 or whatever. I think there's certain ones. And then if somebody wants to, they could go on my website, andrewkevinwalker.com, and they can print out the screenplay and then basically have a signed screenplay. So I think that's basically what I'll be doing. In an effort to not, you know, tire my hand because it is free, I may limit how many things I sign per person, but I don't expect to be very busy tomorrow, but I'm happy to do it and excited to, you know, be sitting there and meet some people and say hi.
Cool. Well,
yeah, 12 to 5.
Have a terrific day with students.
Thanks.
Today.
Yeah,
yeah,
very cool that you're
giving back.
Being willing to take the time. We appreciate your time this morning, but very cool that you're taking the time with the students. And, yeah, very, very interesting stuff. Obviously, 7 is just a very, very special special film in a lot of different ways.
Thank you. I mean, like I say, so much is attributed to luck. And yeah, you know, I remember when people came and spoke at Penn State and how much I appreciated. And I had certain questions that I'm just so glad to be able to answer some of them that would have been questions I had when I was a student.
Yeah, right. That's fantastic.
We appreciate your time again, Andy, and thank you very much.
Take care.
Appreciate it.